Opens a window into Fergus's past.
Oh, interesting. So these are base rates after 60 days. So like a molder, $1.08 to $1.17 an hour. What's the highest paying job? It looks like engineers, the top rate was $1.68 an hour for them.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Young entrepreneurs in Coburg present their summer projects at a business expo.
You just gotta have a big smile on your face and just be really nice. Even if people don't want to buy your stuff, you still gotta be nice to them and just say hi or a nice hello.
A music camp for families has struck a chord in the Comox Valley.
I think what it does is it brings all the different ages to experience something together.
Tanning workshop in Hazleton shares the secrets of this ancient practice.
But I've never seen the skin so strong in my life. And now I know why they survive in the water.
This was a big thing in like ancient.
You gotta hold it like that. See, there's still more. I know there is.
And the Terry Fox Run returns to Confederation Bridge, an incredible experience that helps raise funds for cancer research.
It's such an impressive structure, so you never really get an opportunity like this and see just what it's like to be up there and not in a vehicle.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello again. Welcome to the show. My name is Boris Hassan. I'll be with you for the next half hour. We begin in Ontario, where a time capsule from 1954 shines a light on how people lived in the town of Fergus 7 years ago. During the demolition of the Old Groves Memorial Hospital, crews uncovered a long-forgotten time capsule hidden in the 1954 wing of the building. The contents were unveiled to the public last Friday during the hospital's 5-year anniversary celebration at the new location. The metal box sealed for almost 70 years included a Fergus voter registration list from 1954, hospital blueprints, a 1953 motorist handbook, a Fergus centennial brochure, and a copy of the collective agreement between the hospital and its union. Details with Paul Harriet in Fergus, Ontario.
So this is a Fergus News record from December 2nd of 1954. They're planning a new school for Salem. It's coming soon.
The New Groves Memorial Hospital celebrated 5 years of operation this past weekend, but who knew the old hospital location would still hold some surprises? During demolition of the old building last summer, a time capsule, long forgotten about, was discovered, the contents of which were unveiled to the public for the first time this past Friday. Retired doctor and local historian John Stickney explains what happens when a time capsule is found.
No, they're quite interesting. I come from quite a historical family, so I've seen things exactly like this before. I think probably people taking hospitals and things apart, they probably watch for the things like this, and they would have notified the administration of the current hospital.
Among the items revealed, an old newspaper, the Fergus voter registration list from 1954, blueprints from the original hospital, the motorist's handbook from 1953, a brochure celebrating the Fergus centennial from 1854 to 1954, and a copy of the collective agreement between the hospital and the union at the time. Sarah Shepherd is currently the chief HR officer at the Wellington Healthcare Alliance. She took a look at the agreement and shared her thoughts.
What's interesting to me anyways is just that a lot of the process is the same, just in far fewer words and tighter timelines for sure. But it is kind of interesting seeing how it, like, laying the groundwork for some of these like union contracts, it seems like. Yeah, and how it still very much exists, just expanded quite a bit. Yeah. Yeah, because our books are not this tiny anymore, that's for sure.
What were some of the salaries back in 1954? Those were in the book, too.
Oh, interesting. So these are base rates after 60 days. So like a molder, $1.08 to $1.17 an hour. Grinder, $1.08 to $1.14. What's the highest paying job? A layout, sheet metal, grade one, $1.49 was the highest paid job. Oh, that was in Schedule D. for factories. It looks like engineers, the top rate was $1.68 an hour for them.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine living on that.
Also in the box, a letter written in 1954 by an employee of the Corporation for the County of Wellington, addressed only to whom it may concern. The letter offers a small glimpse into what life was like at the time.
The building of the new hospital has been a great undertaking. When built, it was one of the most modern small hospitals in the province. When this box is reopened, times will have changed as they did in our time. While we are traveling faster than sound, you will most likely be traveling into outer space. We have lived in a very happy age. We are a progressive nation, and our town is striving to procure new industries. I sincerely hope that the people of Ferguson, Canada, have not forgotten that any thriving nation cannot survive without the help of God. Nations in our time have tried without success. In closing, good luck to the people of Ferguson. May you always prosper.
Yay, that's amazing.
I'm Paul Harriet.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're tuned to Viewpoints.
Young entrepreneurs displayed their summer businesses at the Coburg Business Expo in Northumberland County. The 24 entrepreneurs aged 8 to 14 not only received financial assistance, but free business coaching through the Business and Entrepreneur Center in Northumberland. They got a chance to develop their business plans, market their products, and gain hands-on experience. Journalist Dan Jones met up with some of them and discussed their business ventures and also how the funding support has helped them grow.
Hannah Robinson of Hannah's Sweets sells candy specializing in colorful gummies packaged in small bags or reusable glass jars. She says she's hoping to sell 150 candy items by the end of August.
I just love candy so much. My sweet tooth can be filled with this. And honestly, I just wanted a job that I can actually do on my own. And I'm just going to sell it, and people actually want to buy it a lot. You just got to have a big smile on your face and just be really nice. And even if people don't want to buy your stuff, you still got to be nice to them and just say hi or a nice hello, and then that'll be perfect. And sometimes, even if they don't buy your stuff, they'll come back and they'll still buy it.
Sebastian Smith of Empire Bees is seeking to obtain 2 beehives for the community garden in Trent Hills, believing as the beehive population is in decline, something needs to be done. His goal this year is to raise $1,000 through selling honey and bee-related products.
I always loved bees, and I just thought, I kind of wanted to start a little business, so I was like, why don't I start a little business to help the bees? Because sadly, bees are declining in population, and I want to spread the word and let everyone know that this is serious.
Yeah, spread the word, save the bees.
Jordan Lovelace's J-Love Productions specializes in photography and videography services for sporting and wedding events in Northumberland County. He says his goals are to deliver high-quality professional media services, which are both impactful and accessible.
I do mostly sports. I love to do other things too, but I mainly got into sports because I also play sports, and I always like when actual photographers get my picture and stuff like that very much, so I can upgrade all my equipment and stuff like that, and definitely gets you more connections and more clients.
Cooper Jones of Coop's Vacation Hydration indicates there is a need to water gardens, plants, and trees for residents who are on holiday. He is hoping to earn $900 this summer through his lawn and garden services, as he also looks to gain experience in the business world.
Because it's such a dry, summer, I've had a lot of customers. I saw a lot of plants and trees dying, and I thought it'd be a good idea. I think there should be a lot more young entrepreneurs. They help me, buy nozzles for hoses and stuff, like watering cans.
Reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
A family music camp strikes a new chord in BC's Comox Valley. After 20 years of bringing families together with music at campgrounds across BC, the camp was hosted for the first time at Camp Gilwell, just outside Courtenay. Wife and business duo Wendy Lopaticki and Colin Hamilton are co-managers of Jam Camp on the island. Here's journalist Heather Watson speaking with Wendy about their experiences volunteering, facilitating, and managing different jam camps over the years.
I think what it does is it brings all the different ages to experience something together. And music is just one of those art forms that can be experienced at many different experiential levels. So if you have an adult who's a really great musician, they can jam with a child who's just learning, or sometimes you get the opposite. You get a child who is an exceptional singer, or maybe they've played the piano already, and then you have an adult who's never played anything in their life, and they can still get together and share an experience of music together. And there's nothing to really separate out if they're talented or not. It's really just about being joyful.
To find the full story, visit frequencynews.ca. We stay in British Columbia to follow Rachel Jensey. She's a Gitsin artist who resides in Treaty 4 territory, Regina, Saskatchewan. She returned to her hometown in Hazelton, BC from August 4th to the 9th to lead a high tanning workshop at the Learning Shop located in Old Hazelton. High tanning is the method of treating animal hides to make them durable and suitable for use as leather. Artist Rachel Jansey shared a fascinating technique with her workshop attendees, creating salmon leather. She even taught them how to tan at home. Many of her students were surprised by the beauty of the finished project. It's no wonder they can survive in the water, participant Louise at 81. Jansey values the hides above all else. They're the best teachers, she says. Here's Pamela Hassan in Smithers, British Columbia.
Rachel is from Gitsan Territory, but lives in Saskatchewan now. Her father is celebrated Gitsan carver Phil Jans, and so art, historically informed practices, and beauty are in her blood. During the Pioneer Days parade in Hazelton on the last day of her workshop, I stopped in during a show-and-tell portion of her class. When I arrived, Louise, a student of hers, was showing off her sockeye hide that she had worked on during the week.
What we do at first, we started to do the front to take all the, what do you call that, scales. You know, you have, and brush all the, like there's still some meat left on there.
I used to scrape.
A big spoon, but you're gentle with it.
Okay.
But I've never seen skin so strong in my life. And now I know why they survive in the water.
This was a big thing in like ancient.
And I kept with the spoon. You gotta hold it like that. See, there's still more. I know there is.
Tell her what it tasted like.
I don't know. It tastes very funny, but kind of hot and cold. You know, I was going like this. You get dried out the mouth.
So that is how they used to test the tannin to see how strong it was. Is the more it dried your mouth out, the stronger the tannin was.
Rachel has studied with a variety of hide tanning teachers and is relatively new to the practice. But after accepting the challenge to teach a 13-week graduate-level course at First Nations University of Canada, focusing on bark tanning methods, she has now tanned animal hides from elk and bison all the way to mice and other little creatures.
Is this a little lamb?
That's a baby goat.
A baby goat.
Sometimes when they're born at the wrong time of year, especially I've been living out in the prairies, they freeze to death. And so the ranchers call me and I come and pick them up and then I skin them and they make beautiful leather. So there's like four main different types of natural tanning. One is using plant tannins with barks and leaves and roots.
Oh my gosh, that smells so good.
Isn't it? Yeah. So real leather, that's where it gets its smell from, is the plants that it's tanned with.
Tannins are the medicine or biomolecules found in plants. They're what heals a tree if it's been damaged and are known for their ability to bind with proteins or other organic compounds. They naturally occur and are an astringent, which creates a puckering sensation in your mouth. And the tannins natural extract from bark or leaves, such as in this case, transform animal hides into usable leather.
Most of the leather we have today is not tanned like this. It's tanned using chrome or chromium, which is like really harmful to the environment. They started using that process during the Industrial Revolution, and it was to keep up with the demand for leather. Whereas if you look at the old school leather like this, that's all naturally done. They're finding samples that have survived over 1,000 years.
Wow.
Yeah. They call it a living leather because it changes as it ages. I've got poplar here, which I boiled from the bark, and also some from leaves. And then this one is spruce. This is horse chestnuts, which I've never worked with before, but they're really quite high in tannins. This is willow leaves, and this is willow bark. And this is a commercial tannin that we'll do that fish skin in.
Okay.
But mostly I've been working with commercial tannins up to now. So being able to come home and work with the plants here, I'm able to start going right to the source. So it's like you can have leathers that are more made out of plant than they are of animal. It's like this incredible science that our ancestors knew about, and you kind of wonder what it was, how they discovered this and how they explored this. This type of tanning, natural tanning, is something that happens all over the world. This week there was some people who were interested, especially when we did the fish leather on Tuesday. It's like, fish leather? We can make leather from fish?
So because this is audio, can you explain what you're doing and what I'm looking at?
So this is a completely rinsed sockeye hide. We took all the meat and fat off the back, and then we cleaned up the back, and then we did a bunch of rinsing on it. And so now what I'm doing is just squeeze some of the water out of it. So I'm just putting this hide into the tannin, and I'm just like draping it into this jar, pulling it up and down, and I'm going to fully submerge it in there. And throughout the course of up to 10 days, I will check it, and I will do what Louise was doing, is scrape the back of the hide just to open it up and stretch it, release some of the membrane that wants to come off. And it just allows the tannins to get thoroughly into the skin.
Rachel was also smoke tanning a hide and showed me a deer hide that she was preparing that was kept in a large Ziploc bag.
This has actually been put in an oil emulsion, which is a totally different type of tan, and it's you know, to make buckskin, and it makes a totally different kind of leather. And it's really what you're doing with this one is not a chemical change to the hide, it's a physical change to the hide, where you're surrounding the protein molecules with oil so that they can slide past each other, basically, and it keeps it soft and supple.
Yeah.
This type of leather is in many ways a lot more labor intensive. This is probably the oldest kind of leather that we have record of, and it's like back to the Paleolithic times, right? So 400,000 years ago, people were making this kind of leather.
What oil?
This one, I think I used olive oil.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, feel free to stretch it. You'll see that it's like,
oh, whoa, that's like really, it's very eager to stretch. Do you find that, is it like an upswing in interest for tanning? Like young people who want to like maybe start homesteading or anything like that?
I've had many, many teachers. I think, you know, it is a very community-driven activity. All the time I'm finding more and more people who are engaged with this. You know, it's something that crosses all cultures.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to connect people and have people work together and, you know, celebrate all cultural histories.
Thank you to artist and educator Rachel Jans for bringing this ancestral practice to the community of Hazleton on Gitxsan Territory, and to Brenda Barrett for making the learning shop an available and welcoming space to the public.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
We close our show in Sackville, New Brunswick, with a story from Erica Butler. In the morning of Sunday, September 21, thousands of walkers and runners will take to the Confederation Bridge to participate in the 45th annual Terry Fox Run. A significant volunteer effort will be needed, and Straight Shores resident Sharon Allen is looking to recruit around 90 volunteers to make sure everything runs smoothly on the New Brunswick side of the bridge. Here's Erica Butler speaking with volunteer Sharon Allen and with Tantramar Mayor Andrew Black, who says he will most likely take part in this year's event.
Well, this is the 45th anniversary of the Terry Fox Run. It's a very unique opportunity. It's not often the Confederation Bridge gets closed down for events, but that's what's happening this year. Everyone knows what a worthwhile event the Terry Fox Foundation, what's been done over the years has been phenomenal, with the millions of dollars that have been raised for cancer research. To make anything, any event like this successful, we always need people in the background. And it's funny, it's volunteers that help make these events so successful. Sometimes they get overlooked. I always want to send out a special thank you to anyone who's interested in volunteering, because we have so many roles that we need to have filled. We're expecting thousands of people to be taking part this year. And it's going to be fun as well as some hard work.
That's Sharon Allen, a Straight Shores resident, helping to coordinate at least 90 volunteers for Sunday, September 21st, when the Confederation Bridge will close to vehicle traffic to make way for thousands of runners in the 45th annual Terry Fox Run. Tantramar Mayor Andrew Black might just be among those runners. Black has run the bridge not once, but twice, well before he was elected to Sackville Town Council.
It's an incredible experience. I mean, you drive across the bridge. There are lots of signs that tell you that you're not allowed stopping, because obviously people would want to stop on the bridge and take pictures and look, because it's such an impressive structure. So you never really get an opportunity like this to walk across, run across, and see just what it's like to be up there and not in a vehicle. It's a really incredible experience.
Now, the weather, you know, in the Northumberland Strait can be like spotty. So,
yes.
What was it? Do you recall what it was like the two times you were on the bridge?
Well, the last Terry Fox Run was beautiful. It was sunny. It was a little windy, but the sides of the bridge are high enough that you really don't feel a lot of that when you're on the bridge. So it was a beautiful day, and it was a wonderful run. The bridge is deceiving because there's a sizable hump in the middle of it where ships would have to sail underneath of it. And so you can see it, but when you're running it, it's actually really hard. So when you hit that middle of the bridge and you're coming up that incline, it's pretty difficult. But then when you come down the other side, it's pretty much smooth sailing until the finish line.
And it's a 13-kilometer run. So, I mean, is that a challenge for you, or are you a runner, so that's no problem for you?
I've kind of fallen off a little bit in running over the last few years. I would still consider myself to be a runner. I've run a bunch of different races. At the time, the 13, whatever it was, 13.1, I think, because of where it stopped and started, wasn't a challenge at that time. I suspect that if I run it this time, and I'm seriously considering, it'll be a lot more difficult, and it will probably result in me run walking.
Right, which is fine, because a lot of people actually do that.
Sure.
They
absolutely.
They walk the whole way. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, you know, if you're running, you may not, you know, you'll probably be going fairly quick, I would suspect. And maybe it wouldn't give you as much of an opportunity to really embrace and enjoy the view and just, you know, the structure that you're running on.
When you're running or walking, is it a much more expansive sort of view?
Well, I'm only like 5'8", so I had to kind of jump a little bit to sort of see over the edge. But you know, if you walked over close enough to the edge and sort of peeked, you would get a really nice view, and it gives you a sense of just how high the bridge is too. Because again, when you're in a car or a van, even if you were up off the road a little bit, you still don't get that impression. It just doesn't feel as real as it is when you're walking or running.
That's Tantramar Mayor Andrew Black, who says he's considering joining the run across the Confederation Bridge for the third time, this time for the 45th annual Terry Fox Run on September 21st. Back in 2015, on the third ever Terry Fox Bridge run, Sackville resident and Tantramar's manager of tourism and business development, Ron Kelly Spurls, joined the fray to celebrate his 50th birthday. This year, we asked him if he had any advice for those considering the 13-kilometer trek across Canada's longest bridge.
Make sure to bring water and comfortable shoes and all those sorts of obvious things. And, you know, I would just say give it a try, because there's no judgment. I mean, I guess maybe there's a race aspect to it if you're one of the people in the front of it, but it's not, I don't think it's intended to be a race at all. So, you know, just go and challenge yourself. And if you feel like you aren't able to do the whole thing, then, you know, that's okay. You can take a break if you need to, or you can stop and turn into running if you want to. Like, nobody will be judging you. It's a good experience just to know that you're doing something for a positive experience beyond your own experience. So yeah, I think it's really worthwhile and really something fun and something that you'll remember if you do it.
The first ever Terry Fox run on the Confederation Bridge was in 2005 and saw more than 14,000 people walk the bridge to mark the 25th anniversary of Terry Fox's Marathon of Hope. Participants pay no entry fee for the event, but it is a fundraiser, with bridge runs in 2010 and 2015 raising about $1 million to go towards cancer research. Sharon Allen says the volunteer group coordinating the New Brunswick event will also be taking donations to help support activities on the New Brunswick side. A bridge run was planned for 2020, but was canceled due to the pandemic. The event is non-competitive, and anyone walking, running, or using wheelchairs or strollers are welcome to join, but participants must be registered by September 18th. More information is available at terryfox.org. This is Erica Butler reporting for CHMA Sackville and the Local Journalism Initiative.
And that was the last story we'll be hearing from Erica Butler on Viewpoints. She has moved to the CBC out east. We wish you all the best, Erica, and thanks for all the good work you put in over, the last 4 years with the LJI and your radio station, CHMA Sackville. I hope our paths will cross again one day. Take care. Ciao. And a big thanks to our other journalists too this week, Paul Harriet, Pamela Hassan, Dan Jones, and Heather Watson, to both our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassin. Thanks for keeping us company this week, and until the next, ciao.
I'm Candace Vetter in Embrim, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.